Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, getting you ready for a special preview of a brand new patron-only show that we're producing in conjunction with the all-time top 40 season rankings countdown. I'm unlocking this week's patron feedback show for the 37th best Survivor season, Survivor One World, to let you hear what you're missing if you're not already a patron of RHAP. This is just one of the shows our patrons get every week in our patron podcast feed. In addition to the feedback show, we're bringing you the weekly podcast I do with my wife, the first lady of podcasting, called the Patron 5 for 5. Plus, we're doing weekly patron game nights that we also release as audio and video to the patrons. Not to mention, I also do a monthly call-in show with the patrons. This last one was over 5 hours, and that's just the stuff that we're doing now. There are several hundred patron shows in the back catalog to check out on Patreon. You could even call it RHAP Plus. In addition, with all the content, we've got several Facebook groups, Discord channels, RHAP swag, and starting in February, we're offering discounts on merch to our patrons starting at the $10 level. February 1st is the start of a new month, so it's a great time to jump in and check out everything we're offering at robasawebsite.com/patron. You can cancel anytime if it's not right for you, but if you want even more out of your RHAP experience, this is the place for you at robasawebsite.com/patron. I hope you enjoy this special presentation we've unlocked for you of the Patron Feedback Show for Survivor One World with Felipe Chamon. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another patron feedback show for the all-time season rankings, talking about season number 37 in the rankings, but number one in your hearts, Survivor One World. That's right. Going to talk about some One World feedback questions here today. Of course, we had a great panel discussion on Wednesday night, as we've been doing all year long so far. Amon Adwin, Serena Foster, and myself talked about Survivor One World, the 37th best season of Survivor. But we had over 200 feedback questions. We did not get to them all on the panel show. We've gotten some more. And we're very excited to have here with us a Survivor One World super fan. Here is the great Felipe Chamon. Felipe, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yes,
this is my podcast.
Yeah. Hey, it's my podcast, everybody. Yes.
The crowd goes wild.
The crowd is going wild. So here we are with Felipe, who loves Survivor One World. He's Felipe Spradlin on the StreamYard that we're streaming to right now. We're live in the Patreon Facebook group, and if I set this up correctly, I put the link. If people want to call in and ask a One World question, you can do it. So there you go. All right, we're recording this on a Friday, and we maybe we took some people by surprise here today. We got double patron shows coming up today because we're going to have patron trivia tonight live at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Zach Brooks is going to be back for that. So, Felipe, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's a little cold here in Boston, very snowy, but the great Survivor One World kept me company this week.
Yes.
And I just want to get this out of the way right now. I am 100% biased in my love of One World. It was the first season that I saw, and I told the story on the Patreon cast this week, but the quick TLDR is I was channel surfing during a commercial break of American Idol. Episode 2, Tribal Council, Nina and Kat are talking about life experience, and then someone throws Christina under the bus. I'm like, what is this show? And then by the end of the week, I was watching Marquesas on YouTube.
Yeah.
So that is my origin story. So I'm 100% biased, but I'm going to try to look at it objectively. And even though I put it in my top 10 for my own reasons, I can at least sit here and say that maybe it's not top 10, objectively. But I think it's at least top 30.
How many times have you watched Survivor One World, Felipe?
This was actually my second time. I never wanted to look back at it. I've seen clips and like maybe a random episode here and there, but I didn't want to take off the rose-colored glasses that I had because obviously people have always said One World is a mediocre season.
Your so rose-colored glasses. Luster.
Yes, Alicia Rosa. That's the only time that I wish to wear glasses like her.
Yeah. So, Felipe, when did you start listening to Rob as a podcast? Because when we were talking about Survivor Redemption Island, you were talking about the podcast from Redemption Island. So did you go back?
Yes. So I saw Mark Cases on YouTube, and then the next season I found on YouTube was Amazon. And then I was pondering upon the Survivor Wiki, looking at, I don't know if you've met him or heard of him, Rob Cesternino. He has a page on there, and it said he has a podcast. And then so I jumped on, and that was around the time Leaf got voted out. So my first ever RHAP appearance was Leaf's exit interview.
Yes. So I'm sure Leaf nailed it in the exit interview.
If he couldn't hook me then. But then I listened to Vesepia because she was on a few weeks earlier. And I was like, okay, this is more of the jam. And that's actually how I got into Big Brother, because you and Nicole did a fantastic Big Brother 14 preview show. So RHAP really changed my whole reality TV viewing experience.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing all that with us. And I guess let's open up this discussion. Of course, if you are watching the live version, you can ask a question, or you could use the link in the Facebook group if you want to come on and ask us a question here as we talk about Survivor One World. So, Felipe, let me start off with, is there anything that you feel like we missed from Wednesday night? Is there anything that was sort of like a big thing that was like, I couldn't believe you didn't talk about this?
Well, first thing that comes to mind is on every single feedback form or the poll, the season poll.
Yes.
You have a section that is, where does this merge tribe name rank? And we didn't get to hear you talk about Tikiano.
Okay, Tikiano. So I feel like it's not super interesting if the audience doesn't love it or hate it. So where would you rank the merge tribe name? Troyzan says a couple of times, what is it? Something God?
Tiki means God. Ana means year.
Yeah, it's like year of the God. Average. From a scale of 1 to 10, the audience said 5.2.
Oh, that's still too low.
It's not bad. It's not a, like, just smush the names together. It's fine.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best boring names
that
you've ever picked.
Yeah. Give it a 7. It's fine. It sounds like it could be, like, a real tribe name.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my thinking. They kind of... It's okay. Do you have any fake tribe names that if you ever went back, you would want to institute?
You know, I haven't really thought of that. I think that it might be something like, if it was like some like really clever, like RHAP reference, like Seeds Baby or something, you know, like something, just something that would like, you know, be funny to the podcast listeners, and that's it.
Yeah. No, I think I would appreciate that.
Yeah. So... we'll see. I just feel like it's the kind of thing where I don't think I would be bold enough to try to force it, because I feel like that's the kind of thing that people are like, oh, that this is a fake thing. Like, it's so played out doing that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But in terms of other things that I want to talk about, something that I think you touched on a little bit, but obviously it's Kim's season, so a lot of the focus is on Kim, but I really agree with you that Sabrina and Chelsea together are such an underrated pair, because just watching this, I think I had always assumed it was Chelsea and Kim, and even like there are parts of the season that are Chelsea and Kim, but I think Sabrina and Chelsea were instrumental in the cat vote specifically, but I think they were a great team together that we don't talk about. Like, I think they played with each other really well.
Yeah, the cat vote is really an interesting point in the season. It's at the final 7. Troyzan is gone. And we see Kim have this flirtation with, well, I should vote out Sabrina because she is the best player. And it does seem as though the reason why she doesn't pull the trigger is because Chelsea is like, whoa, like, what are you talking about? Like, we can never, because she does bring it up to Chelsea, right?
Yes, she does.
Yeah. And Chelsea shoots it down and then does not go and tell Sabrina.
Like, at least on air.
At least on air, but it could have been like we never see Sabrina really turn against Kim. So, like, I think that that was maybe if there was one mistake that Kim made the whole way through, I think that that might have been it. And I think she got talked out of it.
Yeah. And I think that was probably the most adversity that she would have faced after Troyzan left, like the cat, because there's another universe where she goes to the top 4 with Kat, Alicia, Christina, and Tarzan, or top 5, and votes out Sabrina and Chelsea. And I just also want to highlight Sabrina when Kat doesn't get taken on the reward. I think Sabrina's social play and like talking Kat off the ledge was really well done. She like was able to relate to Kat and bring her back in. And I think the two women together were really underrated that I didn't remember. I always thought held Sabrina especially in a higher light, but Chelsea too really surprised me on this rewatch.
Yeah. And when so Kim, she wins the reward and she takes with her she takes what Alicia and Chelsea?
Chelsea, yes.
And then Troyzan is like, see, this is what I'm talking about. Like he's like trying to get, it's like the same thing that we talked about with Nora when we watched Survivor Island of the Idols. It does seem as though like this got me thinking about like watching this again. I wonder if the person you should pick for the reward, like, should you identify who is the most, like, immature person in the group that's going to, and take those people with you on the reward, because those are going to be the people that are going to be tantruming the hardest when you don't take them. Is there any logic to that?
No, that makes a ton of sense, but, like, on that season, I feel like Tarzan could have thrown a tantrum. Alicia could have thrown a tantrum. I feel like you always.
But Tarzan would get it. I feel like if Kim didn't take him, because Kat was the one, was like the baby who could not understand why she didn't get to go on the reward.
Yeah, she was only 22 at the time, so she was not mature according to the other women. But I felt attacked at that time, even though I'm very immature as well. So she. I think, yeah, you have to take Kat, you have to take your Noras, you have to take whoever fits that mold. If you want to, especially if they're like a very volatile player in terms of with their emotions. But then Kat, she ran Kat back in. So I think that's also a testament to Kim and Sabrina and the women.
Yeah. It was really just such a huge fumble by Alicia, because I feel like that it really would have been in Alicia's Alicia's best move to knock out Sabrina or Chelsea in that spot where she could have. And I'm not sure who ultimately wins immunity that round. At
final. Six?
At seven.
It's Alicia.
At seven.
Oh, at seven, it's Kim. Yeah, Kim won 8-7, okay. 5-4.
Okay, so because for Alicia, like really, like when she's talking with Tarzan and Christina, they're like one person short, because if Tarzan has the conversation that he has with Alicia and Christina at seven that he has at six, where it's like, hey, I want all three of you women to be the final three, but use me to take out the, you know, Chelsea, Sabrina and Kim. I think that that makes a lot of sense for them, where that she wants to, like, the danger of Tarzan, where he's like a Philip, but if he sits at the end, there's a chance that he's able to get the, are there, I guess there's five men, there's five men on the jury. I mean, there's six men on the jury.
With Tarzan.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, sorry. There'd be five. But yeah. there'd be enough votes for him to get to win if he sat in the final three. But if you kept him to the final four and voted him out at four, then, you know, for Alicia, I think she might win if she sits at the end with Kat. Oh, the Kat was very likable. Kat might have been a jury threat.
Yeah, Kat was very likable, and Alicia pissed more people off. But then again, maybe they respect Alicia more for taking out Kim at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think that final seven is really where Alicia fumbled the bag.
She blew it.
Especially because I don't think we saw on screen a conversation that flipped Alicia. She just kind of flipped because Kat
was her idea. It was her idea to vote out Kat.
Yeah, because Kat was a threat in the challenges and was being a baby when she lost.
Mm-hmm.
Just Alicia to set it up.
Yeah, she's one of my least favorite types of Survivor characters, where she's just like, she's so dumb, but as she thinks she's so smart, and not in a fun way.
Yeah, no, the final tribal question, I had remembered it being bad, but I did not remember it being that bad. She was like, me and you, Kim, sister, you saw me as the biggest threat, and if you hadn't gotten rid of me, I would have been there winning that game.
Mm-hmm. She's like, nobody saw me coming in, dominating this thing like I did. Like, all right, so settle down.
Kim cracked a smile, and I'm like, she's trying to hold back laughter. Yeah. And,
it's too nice.
But, yeah, so, but speaking of Alicia, I do want to talk about the relationship that she had with Christina. I feel like that's one of the wildest duo story
arcs
the whole season.
Yeah.
And poor Christina. Apparently, I did some research that Colton did an AMA last year on Reddit saying that Christina was denied her attention deficit disorder medication on the island. So she kind of like, that's why Christina was very kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
That's what he said. But she had so much fight in that first episode when she's yelling at Alicia, because you're wrong, okay? So yeah. Shut up. Mm-hmm. Which is such a great quote.
It is a great quote. Do you think that, is that the kind of thing where should they not put somebody who is on, and I'm not sure like what the medication is, if it's Adderall or whatever it is, like should they either A, like not put that person on the show, or B, should they give them that medication? Because I feel like that it comes up a lot more with Big Brother, where
yeah.
That, you hear about like, oh, there are women that take it and then the diary room gives it to them.
Yeah, I think that at this point in time, there shouldn't be, unless there's like a strict medical reason, I don't think there should be stipulations that prevent people from being on the show if they're good casting. And for whatever reason, they thought Christina Chow was going to be good casting, and that's for other people to decide. But if that was going to help her become better television, and also like help her with her own, mm-hmm. like her brain to stabilize and whatever neuro reasons that
yeah.
you need for the medication. I don't think we should be denying people their medication just so, or to not cast them. I think there's a world that it could be both. I know some medications you need with food though. That's the one thing.
Yeah. I just don't, is it unfair if, you know, she has some sort of an advantage from taking something like that? And again, I don't know a lot about this area of expertise. So please don't drag me.
Yeah, no, I'm not super familiar either. I just feel like she's probably going to be at a better capacity for television. And yeah. from the producer standpoint, I feel like that's something that would be better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think it was a misfire from the casting department on a lot of different levels. And we talked about this a little bit the other night where Jeff, she was cited as one of the two people, supposedly, that made that Jeff felt ruined the season, her
yeah.
and Leaf, in that they just had no awareness to be able to say, okay, you are last on the totem pole. If you flip, then things will be better for you. And yeah. she's like, yeah, but reasons.
That final tribal council that she was a part of, I kind of see a little bit of her point, but also she barely fought. Like, even if
there was no fight.
There was no fight. That said, I would much rather a no fight final four vote than the final four.
This was a good argument to have the fire making. At least that would have been something.
Fair, but if Christina had beaten Sabrina or Chelsea at that point, I would have been very upset, because that's. Right. In my opinion, the best all-newbie final three of all time.
It's very good that you touched on this before, that I had been, you know, sort of like oh, Sabrina's probably better than we thought. But it really, Chelsea not being a zero was my big takeaway from this watch. Because I just always thought that she was just like, did whatever Kim said, and that was that.
Miss Survivor finalist Chelsea Meisner, who shotgunned a beer.
Yes.
On camera.
Yes. And both her and Kim lost to RC.
Yeah, that we should have recounted the votes after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, there should have been an investigation.
Exactly. But I did want to, just while we're on this topic of the final six, Christina, Alicia, I think something that we don't see a lot that I really liked on this rewatch was Kim fake comparing notes with Alicia and Christina on the sand. I feel like we talk a lot about why don't people compare notes, but I think she took it a step further and she's like, I'm in the catbird seat. I know what's going on, and let me fake compare against Tarzan. I feel like we don't see that a lot on Survivor, especially. So I really like that, and I feel like people should utilize that in the future.
This was something I talked about in the evolution of strategy of like Kim's like lying, laughing when like somebody says something to her that is actually true. And she's like, what? Why not?
Yeah.
Like, and when she's like going through that whole thing where she's like saying how, no, Tarzan came to me and he said the same thing about you. And they're like, what? Oh, my God. She's like, can you believe he almost got us? Oh, my God. Tarzan. Yeah.
I feel like that was incredible to watch. But also, now we know her tell. And maybe that didn't work on Winners at War or something. But I actually wanted to listen to the evolution of strategy before it came on today. Mm-hmm. But we had like a last minute schedule change. So I wasn't able to get to that. But
yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that we gave Kim a lot of credit in the evolution strategy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, she was number one on your winner ranking, which I still agree with. I know that 10 seasons later, that might be different, but I still think she's played the single season best game.
I agree. I think through 30, I don't think I would change it. I do think that the question is going to be ultimately when we do an Evolution of Strategy volume 4 one day, will Tony be the most the best winner?
I think Kim still has it personally. Mm-hmm. That's just my take.
Yeah. Because actually, when you talk about the two games, I mean, Kim's game in the merge, pre-merge, like similar to Tony in Survivor Winners at War, is actually very quiet. Like, Kim is very much under the radar and not really a big part of the season until you get to the merge.
Yeah, I think Kim was better insulated pre-merge, though, than Tony. I remember, like, when Denise did her whole thing with Sandra, like, Tony was going crazy and alerting people to his threat level again. And that was, I think he, and I remember Tony being more of a buffoon in the pre-merge than Kim just being kind of invisible.
Yeah. But was he trying to do that? Well, we'll have to go through it. I've never, you know, I haven't gone back and rewatched Winners
at War. But we'll get there eventually. But in terms of, I just think Kim played a phenomenal game. And I was actually a little concerned, not concerned, that's the wrong word, but I feel like people, the strategy heads out there, like I've heard Taryn talk about how he ranks Redemption Highland very highly on his Twitch stream. And he also loves Big Brother 16. I feel like One World doesn't get that same appreciation that those two seasons get, even though I feel like this is a better game to watch. Kim's like, because, and then the argument is Kim played with the most dumb cast of all time. And I feel like, but Derek had an easier level of playing. Rob had that. Like, what's it about One World that isn't held to the same esteem by the strategy lovers?
I don't know necessarily why. I would say that just to take those two things in two parts. So I think that Rob and Derek, to compare those two people, were probably better in the confessional of like telling us exactly like what they were going to do. Like, I think in terms of just like being like a narrator of showing their strategy. But I feel like that Kim's journey is a lot more interesting because Kim has like real choices to make, where Rob, you know, more so than Derek, like lays it, like his plan is obvious from the beginning. And sort of like he sort of like has to choose eventually like what his end game is going to look like. But he has that made up like pretty early on. And Kim, she really ends up having like these two roads that she can go down of like, could I go with the Jay and Tarzan thing or do I stick with the women? And then when she goes down the path of going with the, like, and she's the person that has to then untangle that of like, okay, now I have to get rid of Tarzan or Troyzan. Now I have to get rid of Jay. And then she has to go through that second thing of, okay, do I go with the goats or do I go with my friends? And then she has to then also like untangle all that. And I think that that's like more interesting than anything that, you know, Derek or Boston Rob had to go through.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I also think that One World has so, I read this somewhere in one of the questions and I forget who said it, but One World has a lot more kooky characters that have more like not self-interest, but they make more decisions for themselves, even if they're bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other seasons have more passive players that don't really like the Kim played with a bunch of knuckleheads like Tarzan doing it. Like she played with some wacky characters and had to control. It's like the Keith Nail thing that Josh loves to talk about on Edge of It. No, the Evolution of Strategy.
Yeah. I mean, with, yeah, I think Kim was fortunate that the like the most like the two the second and the third most capable players on the season also just happened to be the most loyal players. And in that way, I think it's probably more similar to Derek with having Cody, who might be like a better comparison for like a Chelsea, of being like somebody who has like good relationships, can sort of like make bonds that Kim maybe didn't have necessarily herself, but then also somebody that was just like a total ride or die. And then Sabrina is probably more capable than anybody else that was in the inner circle for Derek. Although Frankie Grande was...
Yeah, I was about to say, are we about to compare Sabrina and Frankie Grande?
I don't really see them as similar players, but, you know, that was probably a little bit of a hard thing to untangle for Derek. Yeah. Probably harder than anything that Boston Rob had to do of... You know, I have Derek, I have the Beast Mode Cowboy, we have Frankie Grande, we have Cody. You know, how do we get this down to two?
No, that's definitely something to keep in mind with all that said. Mm-hmm. But I think Kim, Sabrina, and Chelsea, like I said earlier, are just really powerful. And the fact that they were so loyal was really a testament to that trio. And you mentioned earlier that Kim had so many different paths. Take a shot every time she says options in the show.
She loves options. That's her whole game is options.
She says that millions of times throughout her confessionals.
And I love that because I feel like that's how I would play also of like, you know, not just like, okay, this is the three or this is the five, this is the three, you know, this is it. Like, I think it's like the best way to play Survivor is like, okay, let me get in good with everybody and then figure out like what's the best way to go.
I mean, that's what you did in the Amazon with, you had your Misfit crew and your Jenna, Heidi, Alex crew. And then
when it works, it works. And when it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah. Not to switch complete gears, but I kind of want to talk about like the editing and the challenges of the season. Cause I think the editing was very well done. I think the editors had a lot of fun with the kooky characters like Kat and the pig segment. I remember the music. They did a great job with that. And even when they introduced the One World twist, they do some fun confessional play, like putting like someone saying, I can't believe we're going to be, and then cutting to someone. Like, I think they did a great job with the editing this season. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite small moments was when Alicia is going through the names of the people in the Alliance on the walk. And she's like, and then bless her heart, Miss Kitty Cat over there. And Cat drops a coconut and she's like drops half the stuff. I think that's a great introduction to the character of Cat.
Yeah.
And I know someone said in the feedback form that, what do we think of them highlighting each castaway when they're first introduced with their name? Because that's something they did in the first episode. I think they have never done it since.
Yeah. Well, they're on a walk and they want to do this reveal to that they end up walking to the same beach. And then this alliance of five gets made. And I think that one of the reasons why in the first place that this was sort of like... not received very well was this is the third season in a row where there's a day one alliance of five, and then like it happens in Redemption Island, that's the final six in the game. It happens in then South Pacific where Coach has like a group on the first night, that's the final five in the game, and then Ozzy comes back, and then here once again people are on a walk, okay, this is the five, and it's like, oh, really, again we're gonna do this. So
yeah,
it was good that they were able to sort of highlight it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's also interesting that I feel like the swap was intended to help that, but then the swap worked out really great for the Solani women, where only Alicia hops over to Monono, which, by the way, if you're going to do One World, why would you send them to a different camp? I feel like that was some of the best drama from the first, like, the good drama, not the ugly stuff that we saw with Colton.
Yeah.
I think that was some of the most interesting part of the first few episodes was the One World dynamic, even though I know I agree with you that, share the ember, share the bow, that stuff got a little old by the third episode.
A lot of that, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that they broke them up for the swap. I think they just wanted to, you know, then like get them away from their original tribe so that maybe it could be potentially more interesting after the merge. I said this the other night, but I just think that, you know, you would probably ideally want to start people separate and then do One World like in the middle.
Yeah. And I feel like in the early 30s, they were trying to like bring people together from different tribes with the summit on millennials versus Gen X. Who can forget about that?
Yes.
But I think they should revisit the One World concept. And I know you said this on the podcast. I think it's interesting. And that even brings us to a question from Sid, who basically, to summarize, said, do you think that A, it should be revisited? And then B, what if they did a One World, everyone was in zero, no tribes, and then every challenge you draw buffs and you compete? And what do you think of that? I have my opinion, but
yeah, I just think it would be too hard to follow in terms of like a narrative. Like maybe you could do that like in an ORG or something like that, but as far as like a TV show where people are half paying attention, I mean, I think that's why we ultimately got into the men versus women, which was just such a bad fit for this cast. As somebody who came out of a men versus women season in the Amazon, you know, they went back to that very quickly again in Survivor Vanuatu. And I would say that it probably only worked the first time in Survivor the Amazon. And I think that, you know, it depends like what you're looking for out of a Survivor season. But I do think that the men versus women, at least with the cast that they had in Survivor the Amazon, like it was a young cast and there was like a little bit like of a flirtation between the men's tribe and the women's tribe, where it wasn't like we were necessarily like people were saying stupid things, but it wasn't like, hey, we can't stand the women's tribe. We hate them so much. It was more like, hey, what do you think the women's tribe is doing today? Whereas like both the other times that they do it, there was a lot of like animosity between the men and the women, and especially here in this season where they're just fighting from the start.
Yeah, that like even in the first 60 seconds when Michael Jefferson pulls the supplies to his camp, that's just like starts the season off with a bang. And another question asked, like, did he create the whole season?
Yes. Yeah, I think he did. That was the inciting incident of the whole show, where Michael Jefferson, the ultimate, like, who's that in Survivor history, completely, like, set the tone for this season. And it's just, it's so weird. You have this, like, camp of men and camp of women, and maybe there were not, like, a ton of, like, eligible men or women that they put on this season, but there is, like, there's no, like, maybe there's, like, a tiny, like, hint of Jay and Chelsea, like, potentially. But it's really just like they're friends. They seem to have like a brother-sister relationship. Like there's no hint of any sort of like showmance at all in this entire season.
Exactly. And I think one of the problems that we would face, especially in a more modern time, but the sexism kind of jumped out a little bit on this season with the men versus women of it all. And not say it didn't in the previous iterations, but I just did not remember like Jonas going up to his final tribal council just being like, Chelsea, we voted that you're the hottest person on the season, but you're not going to get our vote just because of that. And then Tarzan with a little bit of that too, and even Troyzan a bit. I don't know if a men versus women should ever be revisited for that reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody's clamoring for it. Yeah, Troyzan. Yeah. That I felt like he wasn't too bad most of the season, but yeah. Then it like sort of like right after like he's like on the ropes, he's like, see, this is what happens, like a woman, she gets married, she gets everything, and then she's like whoa.
Yep.
That was a hot take, Troyzan.
Very hot take. I don't know if it was him or Tarzan, but someone was asking Monica to get naked in the first episode so they would exchange the ember. I was like, what is going on
here?
No. None of this. But also, I did like the challenges, like most of the challenges. There were a few snoozers, like the knot tying, the do-it-yourself stuff. That was a little bit of a snooze fest. But I think they had some interesting challenges that I would like to see them bring back. Like the final six reward that Chelsea won with the dials. That was an interesting kind of puzzle challenge that I feel like we haven't seen a ton. I like the net trampoline, but not the first challenge, but when they bring that back with the coconuts.
Yeah.
I think that's a different variation of run, do this, and do this task. I think they had some interesting ones. And I love when Jeff is like, Alicia, my nephew can do this better than you.
I always thought like, boy, Jeff Probst's nephew is like, thanks for the backhanded compliment, Uncle Jeff.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, the tree mail for that episode, and I feel like I remember you talking about this on the podcast, was like, what game? This is something we play in your backyard. What kind of game do you play in your backyard, Jeffrey?
It must be in Jeff's backyard. That's why his nephew is playing it. He invented this. I actually, I enjoyed the Coconut Connect 4.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like very simple, easy to follow, fun to watch.
Yeah.
Not too complicated. Like, I feel like every challenge, especially because they had a lot of different rewards versus immunity challenges, they were distinct enough where I feel like Modern Survivor, the reward is just a variation of what they could do on the immunity challenge for mm-hmm. the most part. And then a few of the them are different. But I like the memory game that you talked about that they bring back in Worlds Apart.
Mm-hmm.
And another moment for the editors when they do the Cat versus Troyzan showdown.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking with Cat is going to put 8 items in a row.
Well, she did it.
She took like 9 tries. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was one of the episodes you watched on your Twitch channel as well. Which I liked. I think you should do that more.
Yes. That was fun. I want to speed them up. So we'll see. I might try to do that next time. What is the theme for this season? Like the art direction. I was talking about that the other night also. It's like there's skulls, there's bones.
There's bottles, there's knots. I think it's just like skulls. I feel like there's a ton of Survivor seasons where their theme is just skulls.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed they had a red and black kind of design for a lot of the challenges, and then even on the necklace, the immunity necklace.
Yeah, which was weird because the tribes weren't red and black.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting choice, but I don't know what the theme was. If anyone has an answer to that, I would love to hear that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of that, the Tribal Council set was incredible. It was over the water. I listened to the One World highlight podcast that you did.
Oh, yes.
I think that was the only season you ever did. Like, here's something from every interview that we did this season, except you didn't include Sabrina or Chelsea, which I felt was a slight to me as a fan of them.
But I apologize about that.
It's okay.
Yeah.
9 years later, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But Cochran was talking about that. Their Tribal Council set was terrible, but theirs was nice. It was over the water. I think it was very homey kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And I like that Tribal Council set. And I think the art department did a great job with that.
Let's bring in a question from Mackenzie, who says, I didn't remember until my rewatch how much the men actually listened to Colton during the pre-merge, despite how unlikable and weak in challenges he was. What do you think it was about Colton that made him so good at influencing people?
Yeah, I actually had that question highlighted as well. So I think that Colton pulling out the idol really worked wonders for him that episode, because they had their ragtag group, the Troyzan, Tarzan, Leaf, and Jonas. And I feel like Matt wanted Colton to play both sides with, that was something that they talked about in the first episode, like you go get information from the girls. But I think pulling the idol out really changed the game for Colton. And then people were like, well, he can't go home. Even if we want to vote him out, someone else is going home. So let's just succumb to his every will. And Jonas really was the spokesperson for that in a lot of the confessionals.
Yeah. I mean, Colton is a big personality. And I feel like that there's things that we have learned from, you know, from life, from history, that if like someone is sort of like a big personality, that if they sort of like a yell and scream, you have to do this, and people don't want to become the next target of that person, that I think that people said, well, let's just do what they say, because I don't want them yelling and screaming about me. And I feel like that this was sort of the attitude from the men of like, all right, if this is what Colton wants, just give it to him, because that I don't want Colton on the warpath talking about my name coming after me.
Exactly. And that's kind of what Michael Jefferson said. Again, why am I bringing him up so much? But at the reunion, Jeff asked him that question after he fumbled the bag with Matt, asking Matt Quinlan. But he said, basically, Jay and I didn't want to go. But at the last minute, we were like, okay, let's go. Let's just try to make our position a little better. And at that time, I don't think the swaps were as predictable, but mm-hmm. they left out with the swap. And then the women, that's really like a bad decision in hindsight when you see how the women steamrolled at the end. They could have had an extra number. Someone in the question thread said that there was like some drama between Bill and Colton, though, that Bill threw the idol in the ocean.
I don't know the full story, but the legend is that Bill threw Colton's idol in the ocean. I don't know if he took it from his hand or if he like went in his bag and did it. And maybe that was part of the reason why Colton had such an issue with Bill. I don't know the exact story.
Yeah. So my headcanon is that Colton was being awful and Bill was like, well, forget you. And he throws the idol in the ocean to be like, let's go tribal. That's my headcanon, what I tell myself. But regardless of the issue, that still does not cleanse any of the Colton ickiness from the season. And like that does not put him in any better light. I feel like the things he was saying completely disavow, and even Tarzan getting in on that tribal council saying, I'm so tired of talking about race. And I'm like, get out of here, Tarzan.
Right. That Colton is, you know, might have some interesting strategic ideas, but that he was a terrible player in the season, because even just how he's conducting himself with, he had like the ability to influence people to get what he wanted, but the way that he's conducting himself with Bill, he's like, get out of my face, I don't want to look at you. Like, that's just not how a good Survivor player conducts themselves in any way.
Yeah, even in, like, if Bill was on the jury, you're never getting Bill's vote, regardless of the stuff that you said in the confessional that he didn't hear. Like, at that point in time, you're just being off on Bill's, like, just being friendly and like, I want to talk to you, just hash this out, whatever issues we can be peaceful about this. No.
Get away from me. I don't want to look at you.
Saying some awful things along the way, both to Bill's face and in confessional. I just feel like we don't need that kind of negativity. And I think you brought this up in either your Twitch chat or the podcast from this week, that at the time, like, they were very into villains and heroes. But now it's like everyone has their own heroic moments, and then we can source conflict from the different personalities. But everyone that they cast nowadays is supposedly a hero.
Yeah.
In Jeff's mind.
You know, it's interesting to sort of like think about it. Like, is reality TV better, you know, with our classic like Omarosa type villains or people who are there, you know, the Johnny Fairplays are there. I'm there to behave badly, and this is why you tune into reality TV, where I feel like that the show wants to go in the direction of, you know, we are all like 20 competitors that we all want the same thing, but, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, coming in like in a, you know, mean-spirited way to, you know, arrive at our goal.
Yeah, I think there's a balance that can be found. Like, I feel like you've said this in the past, but the best villains are those that play it up for the camera, like your Boston Robs, play it up for the camera, but then go home and aren't like awful people.
Yeah.
Even yourself, you played it up for the camera. You were a villain at the time, but
I think the balance is like a couple things. Like, I think that the best villains like are only villains to half the audience, you know, like that in the best case scenario, like a villain that's despised by everyone, that everyone hates, is not a great villain on the show. Ideally, your villain is hated by, you know, 60% of the audience, and the other 40% of the audience loves them.
Yeah, I think that's a great balance, that the audience really has that fluctuation.
Yeah, like some people can see like, no, this person is and I really feel like probably like going back to Russell in Samoa is probably a really good example of that, where people hated him, and then also people like, Russell got screwed, you know, Russell changed the game, Russell is the best. Like, nobody other than Mayim Bialik was like, Colton is the best, Colton is amazing, give us more Colton, we love him.
Yeah, apparently he was almost on Philippines, though, according to the, like, I feel like that's what inspired, right?
Oh, taking three people. I mean, he would have been the first person voted out of that game.
I read somewhere that he said he was, like, supposed to bring yellow. So imagine him on a tribe with RC and Pete and Artis. I feel like they would all get rid of him quickly.
Although, Abby Maria. Yeah. I mean, that's a glow up from Mike Scoopin.
Oh, yeah. That is, but we don't talk about him. I forgot he existed.
Yeah. All right, we're not going to... Colton. Well,
Colton.
Was not so bad.
Yeah, maybe it's all about perspective. Like, if Colton being there might have changed a lot of things. I had something to say, but I completely forgot. Oh, the reunion show.
Yeah.
I thought, in terms of reunion shows, that was one of the worst in Survivor history. And even as a one-world simp, I can defend that. State that.
What was it that was so bad about it?
I think it went on too long with the Colton stuff. I saw a question that was like, Jeff couldn't get away from the Colton stuff fast enough. I'm like, but he kept going to his mom and Mayim and that random guy in the audience, like, who had a bad take. I don't remember what it was. I just remember it being not great. And I just feel like we could have sped it up, got to other questions. Like, Sabrina was not spoken to. Chelsea had one word.
Mm-hmm.
The cat segment, they didn't even have audio for. They just showed clips of her being,
A little bit of a misfire. I definitely got the sense watching that the Colton's opinion, the season got boring after Colton left. I really felt like Jeff agreed with that sentiment.
Yeah, but I disagree. I think the post-merge was more fun to watch.
I agree. I'm on the same page. I'm just saying that I think that Jeff and maybe with the powers that be in production felt like this season was boring.
That's definitely fair. Especially when you have people like Leaf and Christina and who else? Jaybird, who actually was not as bad as I remembered, but Michael Jefferson, like all these enigmas that made it to the merge, whereas at least Colton and Matt and Bill and Monica all popped on screen. Nina, my queen Nina.
Yes, you're a big Nina Acosta fan?
I mean, I'm biased, of course. That's she and Kat were arguing at my first ever tribal council, so I always remember Nina.
Yeah. But I think that's a good point. So, like, we heard that interview that Jeff gave, way back when, where he talked about how, you know, there were two players in Survivor One World. I'm not sure if he ID'd them or if we were able to just suss out, like, who he was talking about. But you get the sense that maybe Jeff was, like, super frustrated that this was going to be a steamroll. And, you know, Christina and Leaf, I mean, I don't really know what Leaf could have done differently, like if there was a vote where Leaf could have figured it out, or I feel like that maybe Leaf just gave him nothing at tribal council where he was just like so furious, where, you know, that'll happen, where if somebody like Jeff will ask a question, if you just give like a non-answer or no answer, like, you know, he gets pissed.
Yeah, Leaf was a little lost in a lot of his answers. Even at the reunion show, Jeff asked him about what it meant to be representative of the little people community, and while he gave a good answer, he was just like very all over the place in terms of, he was like, yeah, it meant a lot, but then I hated what Colton said. Also,
he's like a word salad all the time, Leaf.
Yeah, he had like three confessionals all season, so it's not like we heard a lot from him. I do think that vote was interesting because it was a 4-2
which
two,
one no. The Leaf vote,
yeah, because if Tarzan voted for Leaf and was one of the four, obviously he made, I think, a good move for him, even though I wish Tarzan had just rolled the dice and tried to put the third vote on Kim. But in another universe, it could have been a 3-3-3. And then I don't know.
Yeah. It was four. It was four votes Leaf, three votes,
Tarzan, two votes. Well,
didn't Tarzan have the, immunity? I think that was
not Troyzan, Tarzan.
Three votes Tarzan, two votes Kim.
Yeah, so Troy and Leaf voted for Kim, and then the girls split 3-on-3, Leaf and Tarzan, and then Tarzan voted for Leaf, sending Leaf home. But at that point, Tarzan was just planning to get to his wife, I think, so he was just going to do whatever he could to keep advancing to a certain point. And even though I don't like Tarzan, I did like the stuff with his wife. They did have a beautiful connection, and that speech at Final Tribal was moving, if I was also annoyed with Tarzan.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as Leaf's voting, I don't know what Jeff was expecting Leaf to vote a certain way. I think he voted for the right people like every time he was supposed to.
Yeah. Well, he was with Jonas in the Jonas 10-2 vote.
His vote's not changing anything.
Yeah, exactly. But on the reunion show in Tarzan, I think going to Tarzan's wife was kind of unnecessary. I feel like we lost a lot of I did appreciate Alicia's apology, but I feel like we could have gone more into her talking, a little less Colton, a little more on Alicia and her bullying.
She had to apologize for that she was a special needs teacher, and then referred to Christina. She's like, I don't want to misquote her, but basically she's like, Christina is so bad at this game, she's like one of my special needs students.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, like, obviously the quote was terrible, but when I went back, I thought I was expecting much worse. She was basically like, if she had just said, I'm a teacher and but then you see the Chiron. But she just was talking about that, talking to Christina, talking like to a student, basically, yeah, was her saying. And I felt that her apology was very sincere, and I bought it. Maybe I'm the sucker. Mm-hmm. But just the top three, we barely heard from them.
Yeah.
And I think that's a slight on the reunion. We too much Tarzan, too much Colton, and then not enough Kim, Chelsea, Sabrina, Alicia, Kat.
Yeah.
And Tarzan even barely got anything in at the reunion.
Yeah. They did talk to him, and he talked about how he was, people are loving everything they saw from me. I mean, it's like one of the best. Oh, that's Tarzan.
Yeah, no, I was asking, who says that, Troy's in just your family?
I don't know. Yeah, everybody. It's like the 99% positive.
Yeah. I do think he...
Like Richard Hatch or something.
Oh, I rolled my eyes at that. But I do think he was a good person to bring back, or at least be in the mix. I don't know if like we needed him on Game Changers, but I think like if you're looking at people from One World, I feel like Troy's in the obvious pick besides Kim and Sabrina.
Yeah. I guess we'll talk about this when we get to Survivor Game Changers, which may not be too far off. But that I think that Troyzan as an underdog is one thing, and Troyzan as part of the majority alliance is another. Because I don't even think that he really, you know, popped in the season as a big part of like the group that was in power. Like, it really wasn't until he realized that he was on the outs that, you know, he started to have a story in the season.
Agreed. And I think that follows with what happened in Game Changers. Like, when he was the one person on his swap tribe, then he popped on the screen again, and then he got a little One World-y, Troyzan. But then once he fell back into the majority alliance with Sarah and Brad and Sierra, then he kind of just like mellowed out, and we really didn't hear from him.
Yeah, I think that his mentality when he's in the numbers is like a very like old school idea of like, hey, let's not rock the boat. Let's stick with the numbers. Let's just, you know, vote everybody else out. And this is our group, and we'll just ride this thing out. And so ultimately, like, he's interesting television when he's not in power, but, you know, is somebody who really wants to like squash the resistance when he is in power.
Yeah, and I think his time at the auction was like, that was his best episode in two seasons. That, oh, this is my island of it all. Mm-hmm. He said that four times before he even said that in the challenge. He was trying to make that a thing.
He was trying to make it a thing, yeah.
But I think I agree with you. They need to bring back the auction, and either the only thing that I might disagree with, maybe like throw in the advantage. That's the first thing they pop out and said, no more advantages after this, if they really want to keep the advantage. But I just bring back the food, and Kim stocking up on peanut butter in the shower was a great little interlude. Kat not knowing there's bacon on a BLT. I think it's just fun character moments that we miss out on these days.
Yeah. I wonder if they could do something for the advantage in the challenge, like with the fire tokens, like somehow just use that and then just keep the auction just for like, let's have like a funny sort of thing. Like, or maybe you have to like, you have to pool your money with somebody to buy an item. Like, no one person can buy an item, but I just think that just keep it sort of like maybe we could like reveal like who's working with who, but just like, let the survivors eat, you know, a mass quantities of food.
Yeah. Two ideas. One I've had for a while, and then one that just came up. What if the fire tokens were what you needed to buy the auction stuff with? What if they like brought back the auction with the fire tokens? Well, I think.
I just feel like that the how many fire tokens do people have at this point? And like, it's not really much of a like of an auction thing where it's like, you know, people have like three, two, like it's like once the bidding gets past one fire token, I think it gets tough to do that unless you did like pennies of fire tokens or something like that.
Yeah. And then the other thing, kind of inspired by the way they did it in Australian Survivor this past year with, I was thinking, what if you, when you buy an item, you're required to give it to someone. You're like a second version of that item. So like, if you get a chocolate cake, you have to give a chocolate cake to someone else. And then maybe like it mixes up the balance of like the power. And like, if Kim gives all her stuff to Chelsea, and then Kat's like, maybe I am on the bottom. Maybe it's something, I don't know. That's something I thought of.
My big takeaway with the auction from Survivor One World is like, they're overthinking it, that, oh, the auction is broken, Shireen broke the auction, okay, we can't do it anymore. They figured it out.
Just make it about food. Like, that's it. Like, don't, you're overcomplicating this. Like, and, we would much rather see an auction than, a stupid reward challenge, a segment on Redemption Island, Ghost Island, whatever you're going to give us, people like, getting spaghetti all over their face, better than whatever else you can show us.
You're preaching to the choir. Yeah. I did see online that apparently Christina had bought a lasagna for $80, and that's why she didn't go higher against Troyzan, because his winning bid was $420. Mm-hmm. And somewhere Ozzy was celebrating.
Yes. But
that I did think that was something to the edit miss. And just show us with Christina with the lasagna. I feel like that's 2 seconds more. Mm-hmm. But also the auction, something else that needs to come back is the touchy subjects challenge.
I think that got broken from Survivor San Juan del Sur. And they're like, all right, that's it. We're never doing this again.
Yeah, take it away. They need to bring that back. And I think in San Juan del Sur, they did it kind of like a mix of Fallen Comrades, where it was like, whose middle name is Josephine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one I like, because even if it's a little broken, which I don't think it was, there was a majority alliance besides Troyzan going out. I think it was all over the place. Like Chelsea was the second one out. I think this one can be brought back. And just even hearing like, Christina, you're the biggest poser. No, Troyzan was the biggest poser. John Fincher, you're the biggest poser.
Yeah. yeah, Christina, I think, God, who do you never want? No, who doesn't deserve to be here was what she got.
And like that's also like where who do you trust with your life, Kim? Like that stuff in a different cast, especially with the modern template of casting like bigger fans who know the game and who want to be there. I think that would play more. Like who do you trust with your life? If someone said Tommy, then maybe something clicks in Island of the Idols for the Noras and the Lanes of it all.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a way to do it, like if they like did the producers like did an interview with everybody and like asked them in their interviews like all of these different questions in one way or another, and then just like they like because how do they collude in that? They colluded on in Survivor San Juan del Sur. They colluded on whose ropes they were chopping.
Yeah, and I believe they just wanted to get Missy the reward win. It was. John and Jacqueline, Natalie and Missy and Baylor, they just went after the outsiders, and then they were like, okay, I'll chop Jacqueline's now, and then they all go to Jacqueline. They just spoke it out loud. But maybe if they have like even a wall up that you can't see, I don't know if that's too complicated.
Like a Big Brother. They could do it in the Big Brother backyard. They could do it here.
Exactly.
Have a dice cube.
Bring it back and Jeff just yell at people. Say, you're not allowed to talk. You can't talk during this, except if you're just reacting. If I ask you a question, you can talk. But. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're going to keep touchy subjects with the coconut chop, that I think that the tweak they need to do is if I get the question right, you can't chop my rope.
Ooh, I like that. That needs to be implemented. Mm-hmm. But then you would be the only one to not be able to chop a rope in that one round in Amazon. Where you threw the joke answer, right?
that's right. I was wrong, and then everybody chopped me for being a wise guy.
Yeah, but not the Memphis and Enzo one.
not those wise guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are a few other questions that I would like to get to if you have time. Colleen or Cooleen. If we want to go a Borneo reference, the attitude towards the women by Tarzan makes this a bad season. When he started wearing Left Behind clothing to tribal Cat's shirts and her undergarments, it was revealed he had her on her head and she was visibly upset at tribal. Also him questioning Chelsea about her anger at her plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
About her boob job was very cringeworthy. How do you think a present day audience would react to Tarzan?
I don't know. I don't think that the audience would be too different. I mean, based on what we saw on the show, I don't think that the audience would be too different about Tarzan than versus now. You know, I just feel like that he is a guy who seemed like he was a very smart person, but, you know, just has these impulses that he is unable to control. And there's one point in his last episode where he basically says something about how, you know, that he's, I think he might be telling us in a confessional, he's like, well, I actually think I have a good plan. I might be able to pull it off if I haven't screwed it up by being irascible around the camp. And so it's sort of like he's like recognizes like, oh, I say and do horrible things,
but he's also able to have some sort of like a, like a, he talks about like, oh, I use Colton as a shield. Like, I feel like that, that he has these two things where he is able to sort of like be like looking at the game like 3D chess sometimes, but then other times he can't not say the first thing that pops into his head.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting character to look through that lens. Like, he has a lot of like, he has self-awareness but doesn't have the self-control, I think is kind of what I got from him. I do feel like he was not giving Jeff a lot of what he wanted, but Jeff seemed to love him.
Jeff loved him.
Like,
because Jeff would ask him a direct question and he would say things like, I shan't say. The game is afoot. And then, or he would like talk about like, the allegiance of the tribe is attached to a different lodestar. And Jeff's like, all right, hold on. Let me try to figure this out. Let me see.
It's like a puzzle for Jeff.
It was a puzzle for Jeff. So Jeff liked that. It was at least it wasn't like an it was a non-answer, but it wasn't a boring non-answer.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to my thoughts on the reunion. I think that's not the avenue if it's a live show, but when you have all the time in Tribal, I think that's more fun. Because he was kind of all over the place in the reunion as well. He was trying to make jokes, and then he was like going way off tangents. But I think Tarzan was interesting, but I don't need to see Tarzan again.
No.
Yeah, I think we've passed it. I don't think he would have been in the top three fan favorite people if he was on a modern season, but also that doesn't exist anymore. So
there was a couple of good Jeff lines in the season. There was one where they're at Tribal Council, and I forget exactly who says it. I think it's Colton, where they ask him a question, and Colton's like, duh. And Jeff's like, well, reverse duh, double dare,
double
on,
dare
you.
On you. Jeff was definitely saying some wild stuff that season. Do you have any others on your list?
I have to flip through my notes that I meant to pull some sound clips, but I don't have them.
The ball challenge, which you and Nicole had a great time with in the podcast. Michael with both balls hanging on opposite sides of his disc.
Yes.
That was a great one. that is a great challenge, and it's easy to do. I think they should bring it back more often. I think they did bring it back recently, but what else? I think Jeff had some fun stuff. Like, he looked like he was having fun, and I know this is the time where he was like trying to go to do the talk show, but I think he was having fun on the season.
Yeah. It's interesting. Let Loose has a question. Does Jeff know what makes a good season?
I think Jeff sees it from a different perspective, right? He's on the beach. He's hearing things. I don't know how much of his involvement was back then, but he was an EP, at least according to the credits. I think he thought that Kim was likable. I think it depends on the winner for him. I don't think it depends on the season. Like, even with Edge of Extinction, he was like, oh, the winner is such a mystery story. You're going to love it. With Mike Holloway, this is the best season of all time because of who he likes. I remember he hyped up Kara Mowen a ton because Cochran won.
But I think so. Like, if we're taking a look at, like, how does Jeff look at a season? Like, I think he looks at it like when it's like a hero, and usually a male hero is able to like conquer all adversity to, you know, overcome the odds and win in the end. Where whether it's Mike Holloway, whether it's Ben. Whether it's whether it's Cochran, who is like he didn't have like sort of like the obstacles in his way, but he's the unlikeliest of winners when you sort of just look at them. I think that that's what Jeff is looking for in terms of like one person overcoming adversity to go on to, you know, to win the game against the odds. But that might be exciting when you are on the beach, but I feel like that alone does not a good season make.
I agree with that, especially when you consider that a lot of those seasons had kind of pagongings or a lot of idols or immunities to block the pagongings. For me, I kind of get what Jeff is saying, though, because if my favorite archetype, which is like a woman of color who is bold and strategically dominating, like if they're succeeding, then I would have the same reaction as Jeff. Like, I love Sandra, I love Suri. So if they succeed, then I would be like, this is the best season ever, even if Suri like pagonged everyone and won easily like against Redlin. I did want to say that someone told me a statistic that this is the best average placing for women of color on the show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Sabrina, Christina and Alicia all made the top five. So I think that's important to highlight in terms of this season, success story in terms of that department.
Good to note. I feel like that in terms of just like what I'm looking for, like in terms of a good season, and I haven't necessarily seen if this tracks with the seasons I think are the best, but I think that what I'm looking for is like a interesting cast of characters, not just necessarily one person who goes on to get the win, who I think is sort of like the optimal person, but you know, a assortment of like viable winners who are, you know, interesting characters and playing an interesting game.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Panama is one of my favorite seasons, and obviously Ceri's on that, but it's just a bunch of kooky characters, and that's what I love. And then if you infuse like strategy in it, then you get like something like Kagyan, which a lot of people love as well. So that's also, I think the week to week, if there's like a lot of episodes that are great, then that helps the season. Cause I think this season, even though it was a pretty impressive run, like watching week to week was probably slower than watching it on a binge.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But to answer the question, I don't know if Jeff knows what a good season is, especially in the modern times.
Right.
And that's why I wanted to shout out the editors here, because I think they had a great narrative, even though it was predictable. And it was really Sabrina's story in the first half, Kim's story in the second half, and then at the end, those are the top two. I think that was like really easy through line, and we really got to see all of it. And Sabrina was a great narrator as well.
Yeah.
A few more things I had on my list, and then also questions. I'm sorry if I'm taking too much
time. We're doing great.
Okay. Josh Small basically asked, what happened to Christina? She had a lot of potential in the first episode, but was it just getting constantly beaten down by Alicia, Colton, and Tarzan?
I don't think it helped.
Yeah, I think that definitely had to be part of it. Like, at a certain point, she was just over it and just wanted... That's kind of how I felt about Bill. Like, that's why in my head canon, he said, okay, maybe this works and I survive another day, but if I go home, that's not that bad. And I don't blame him for wanting to go home after all that.
All right, we'll be right back to talk more about Survivor One World with Felipe. Just a quick word from our sponsors. I also want to mention that the patrons got this episode without any commercial interruption in the patron podcast feed. But for everybody else, got to take a moment here and just thank some sponsors here. I want to thank our friends over at Monk Pack, a brand new sponsor to the show. Delicious, nutritious food you can count on. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast. It's January's over. It's all too common to set health goals that never actually stick. New Year's resolutions, we're looking at you. When it comes to eating better and consuming less sugar, let's be honest, healthy snacks, sometimes they do not taste very good. They don't fill you up, and they certainly don't satisfy your cravings. That's why this episode is sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but with 1 gram of sugar or less. Monk Pack Keto granola bars contain just 1 gram of sugar, 2 grams of net carbs, and they're only 140 calories. They're great for anybody following a keto lifestyle, but also the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. I try to eat very healthy. Longtime listeners know that, and I got some Monk Pack granola bars. They are fantastic snacks. If you are somebody who is trying to count carbs, it is very hard to find something that is a snack that you can eat on the go. And Monk Pack granola bars, they don't make you feel like you're missing any carbs. Monk Pack keto granola bars have a soft and chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like coconut cocoa chip, maple pecan, peanut butter. My favorite is, of course, the peanut butter flavor. They've also got a chocolate sea salt version. It's the perfect for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or a great
late-night treat. In addition to being keto-friendly, they're also gluten-free, grain-free, plant-based and non-GMO with no soy, trans fat, sugar, alcohols, or artificial colors. They taste incredible. And you can't beat the low-sugar nutrition or the taste they provide. And by shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store by getting Monk Pack delivered right to your door. Try it for yourself and see. We got a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase with any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering the code RHAP at checkout. Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whatever you prefer. To get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's MUNKPACK.com. Select any product, enter promo code RHAP at checkout to save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. We thank them for sponsoring this podcast. And then before we get back, I want to thank IP Vanish for sponsoring today's show. What is IP Vanish? IP Vanish is a virtual private network, a VPN for short. A VPN is a super important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on a computer, tablet, phone, even things like a Fire Stick when you're streaming media. And when you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. So what you're reading, searching, watching, it's all encrypted. That's important because what you're doing on the internet, that's none of my business. It's no one else's either. IP Vanish helps you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. IP Vanish is just $3.49 a month. Just $3.49 a month. $27.99 a year. You can help protect your online privacy and security. Here's what you get with IP Vanish: anonymous IP address. That means your personal IP address can't be tracked by anybody on the web. IP Vanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70 plus locations. Get protection when you're using public Wi-Fi too. Remember, with IP Vanish, all your data is encrypted, so no one can snoop on what you're doing. They got 24/7 support. Email them, chat with them, even call them. They are there to help. If you remember, they supported the show a few weeks ago. They came back with an even better deal. To offer something special for the new year. You're getting 65% off now, so go to ipvanish.com/rob to claim your 65% savings. They have plans starting at just $3.49 a month or $27.99 a year. This is the time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotion, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish, it's the best of the best. Even rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot, and that's with more than 6,000 reviews. So show them some love. They're repeat sponsors. Remember, it's ipvanish.com/rob to get the deal and start protecting yourself online. And now let's get back to talking about Survivor One World with Felipe. Felipe, let me ask you this question. This is from Tinny, who says, would the One World theme have worked better in Winners at War or any other seasons? What do you think about if they would have done Winners at War as One World?
I think there's a lot of potential there. My questions are, would they have done One World instead of Edge of Extinction? I don't think so. And then if they also had the fire tokens, then that's just way too much time. Mm-hmm. To dedicate to everything, I feel like we lose a lot.
Yes.
But I think in terms of a concept, a One World would be phenomenal on an All-Star season. I feel like you've often talked about rivals with One World and see like Corrine and Sugar, Abby and RC all on the same beach.
You'd want to see them together, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's what I think for Survivor Winners at War. If you were going to take something from Survivor One World, should Winners at War have been men versus women?
Especially because they were quarantined. That's they were separated into two different.
I thought of this at the time, and they brought them in. They brought the men's tribe in. They brought the women's tribe in, and I guess they tried to maybe fake them out to think it was going to be men versus women. But I actually think that would have been a very interesting alignment of, you know, you would have separated Rob and Amber, separated Jeremy and Natalie. Like there was like a lot
Tony
of
and Sarah.
Tony and Sarah would have been separate. Yeah, there would have been like a lot of like pairs that would have been separated by doing it that way. And I think it would have been really interesting to see. And if there was ever going to be a group of women that was going to be able to like match the men physically, you had Natalie that season, you had Sarah, you had like some, you know, really strong women in the challenges, and you know, some geezer guys.
Yeah, no, I think that would have been the best.
Sophie, also like another like really strong woman. Yeah, Kim.
Denise. I think, yeah, that women's cast was pretty stacked in terms of like composition. Even if you like change some of the challenges also to like be more even, I guess. But I think the women would have kicked the men's asses. That's just my opinion in terms of the group that they had. And I think that would have been a lot more interesting because then you have also Yule would have been able to interact with Rob, and that's something we didn't get because of the Poker Alliance. And like all the duos would have been separated and had to really figure it out. And then also that Kim has experience. So then we're happy for the One World representation because it's like full circle sort of moment. I think that would have been interesting.
Even though we said like men versus women probably don't need to do it again, I do think that that would have been the one spot where it would have been interesting to do it.
Yeah, I do think we have a very different season though. I think Tony doesn't last as long because I think he's one of the quote unquote weaker guys compared to some of the other, like more, at least historically dominant players. I don't know.
You think that he gets voted out because he can't hold his own in the challenges?
Not that. I think a combination of that and I don't know how Boston Rob would do with Tony's antics. Like,
yeah, I feel like that Rob and Tyson have a lot of power there. And I do feel like that they're looking at Tony as somebody who is a threat. I know that Tyson was looking at Tony early on as somebody, okay, we need to get rid of him. And then Tyson just didn't have enough power in the group to be able to make that happen. So I feel like that, yeah, probably it's not a Tony win.
Yeah, I also think maybe Nick struggles in that scenario. I think Adam is okay because then he like just buddies up to Rob. I think Ben goes out. I think we have like a really different boot order.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Compared, I would love to see the hypothetical season, but mm-hmm. obviously
brand steal it somebody.
Yes, Mike Bloom, get on that.
Mm-hmm.
A few more questions. Michaela, kind of. I think we got to this, but. Basically, why is Kim's not impressive because the cast was so bad? We kind of talked about that already.
Kim's impressive. Stop with the hot takes, okay?
Thank you.
Kim's impressive. You. Wasn't a good. There weren't that many other great people, but it was impressive. All right. How many survivors have that many great people on it?
I agree with all that you said.
Okay. How about this, Felipe? Take Kim and Boston Rob out of the mix. Who has the more capable season? Like, give me the field of Survivor One World minus Kim or Survivor Redemption Island versus minus Rob.
It's been a minute since I watched Redemption Island. I think One World has the more self-interested group of players. I think Redemption Island has a lot more passive people. I think if Kim's not there, I think we have Sabrina, we have Chelsea. Alicia's a mess, but she's self-interested.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kat was also some self. I don't know. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Matt Quinlan, Colton, Troyzan, Tarzan, even a bit. I think Jonas was. I think just going off, and then Redemption Island. I think we have a few of the Zaps.
Yeah.
Andrea and Grant. No. Grant, I don't know.
I think it's a deeper cast in Survivor One World that I feel like that. There were just a lot of the Zaps didn't really bring a lot to the table, and a lot of the people that were from the Ometepe were just sheep. So I do think that Kim probably won against a better field.
I agree with that statement as well.
And it's Kim's also, first try.
Agreed. And she also won against the stronger competition at the end with Sabrina and Chelsea. She brought
better people to the end as opposed to bringing goats to the end.
Yeah, Rob won 8-1-0 over Philip and Natalie and didn't even sweep the jury, but Kim almost swept the jury with Sabrina there and Chelsea.
Would
there.
Rob have won against Grant and Andrea?
I want to say
probably,
yes.
But I mean that's basically what Kim did.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to ask this question, speaking of the final three, if Christina Cha wins Final Four immunity, and she was right there, do you think that's when Sabrina and Chelsea flip on Kim, or do you think something else happens?
So I'm trying to think about how they could do it. I mean, Sabrina and Chelsea were tight, but could they potentially, like, that would have been, like, for Chelsea, you know, it's like the Spider-Man problem of, like, you know, do you save the girl or save the world? Like, which one is it?
Spider-Man.
Like,
isn't that Heroes? Save the cheerleader, save the world.
That's like basically it's like the ultimate, like the comic book problem of the hero go save their girlfriend or do they save the bomb that's going to go off. Basically, you know, Chelsea's two friends are drowning. Who does she save in that spot?
I think at that point, maybe I'm just really trying to root on my girl Sabrina, and I think at that point, Sabrina goes to Christina and tries to at least push it to fire and then maybe goes home as the ninth juror. But
yeah, I don't think we know what Chelsea is necessarily going to do. Like, we assume that she's going to, vote out Kim. But or about Sabrina, but we don't know for sure.
And like we said earlier, like Chelsea and Sabrina had a really great relationship that wasn't as highlighted. Mm-hmm. They were very tight throughout the whole game. So maybe we see a different story and
yeah.
Chelsea is like,
no, I'll tell you what happens. Great. Kim talks Christina Cha into giving her the immunity necklace.
That I can see that. Yep. Okay.
There's a non-zero chance that happens.
There is non-zero chance. I agree with
Sabrina,
that.
Christina.
We live in the best timeline, yeah. I think. I think we live in the best timeline.
We really want it. We plan to all go the three. Like, oh, you did? Yeah. Do you mind? Can you just give us the necklace?
Yeah. I do love that Kim straight up told her there's no way you're saving yourself tonight. I think that earned her Christina's vote. Just like ended that conversation. I think that's something that if you know it's a done deal, I think just tell them, especially when there's no idols in play.
She just said, it is what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Didn't waste my time.
Yeah. Leah asks, are there any One World players that haven't returned yet? Should obviously Sabrina's there. I think Chelsea would be an interesting, I believe she was also in the mix for second chances based on what I remember.
I don't remember that one. She was in the final 32. She might have been like in the list like that.
Yeah.
That Redmond spoiled of like here's all the people that are in the mix for one of these things.
Yeah, I believe she was in that. She definitely wasn't in the top 32. I think Sabrina would have been fun to see again. I think, like you said, she had some family stuff come up right before.
Yeah. How would Sabrina have done in Survivor Second Chance? Is there anything that you could pinpoint?
I think Sabrina would have done... Well, I think she makes the merge. Mm-hmm. Unless something catastrophic happens and she's like on a decimated tribe because... I don't know who is taken out.
Yeah, she's good in the she was actually bad in the challenges. But I think it's a question of was she throwing challenges? She got some heat at the final tribal council of why were you so bad at challenges?
Yeah, she was bad at the individual ones, but I think she was good at some of the. Mm-hmm. She was really good at the puzzle. She like came from behind at that puzzle, the tree one, back in the tribe stage.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think it was very much that cat. Episode where she like was the first one out and then she didn't even beat Tarzan and people were like, well, how good are you even? But mm-hmm. I think she's solid enough in the challenges that she can get back.
I think she would have been fine because she was not somebody who was like over schemey that came in with like a big like threat profile. So I think it would have depended if she was like on which tribe, but I think that she would have been like right there.
And she and Steven knew each other because she was in New York. So I'm assuming she was the wine and cheese, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so.
You would know. Yeah. So I think she would have worked well with Steven, with your Spencers. I think she could get along with. I think she can tame Abby Maria. I think a lot of people think that they could, but seeing her work with Kat and all the cuckoo crazy people on One World, I think she could have worked with Abby
Maria. Whose spot does she take? Monica Padilla?
Maybe either her or Kelly Wentworth, I think.
Oh.
Yeah,
that changes a lot if you take out Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah, I definitely think that. But I also think I saw someone say this, but are you surprised Alicia has never returned? At least in the Lynn Spillman era.
So I'm trying to think of where they would have brought her back. Like maybe she was in the mix. I think that she did have the fling with the David Murphy from what I recall. And, I don't know if there was a spot for her, and I kind of feel like that her time has passed. I do think that she had, medical issues also at some point after the show. Yeah. So I'm not sure at what point that was going on, but I think we were fine with just the one time.
I think we're fine, but I think that she's someone that we could bring up. I know a lot of people say Jonas. I personally didn't get the Jonas hype this rewatch, but
I enjoyed him. I thought he was interesting.
I enjoyed him on the show,
yeah,
but I don't know if I enjoyed him enough to like be like one of 10 male spots on a future season. I don't know if we need that.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. I think the Rooster could be fun, and obviously Bill Posley. I would want to see again to get some sort of redemption, but I think he's gone.
Yeah,
I
think he's fine. The thing with Bill, who seemed like a super nice guy for a comedian, he really didn't say anything funny.
Yeah, I think he definitely. I did like One World. is out the window.
One world is out the window.
Yeah, your winner pick, Bill Posley.
Yeah. Well, I was like, hey, this guy's a comedian. He's going to be able to make everybody laugh.
You had this whole, like, it's going to be like high school, and Bill's going to straddle the men and the women and the misfits.
Yeah,
and
what
the
do I
cool
know,
kids.
Felipe?
You're good at Big Brother picks, I will say that.
Yeah.
But yes. This was the flop's second pick after Fabio. She mm-hmm. got Kim right. That's a fun fact
yeah.
about the season.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else here. Sabrina's sunset confessional with day 39, I thought was super powerful and beautiful. And
yeah, she did a good
highlight that.
Yeah, big confessional. I feel like that was missing throughout the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't they tell her story?
They didn't tell Kim's story either. Like, they showed it at the end that she was like a recent divorcee who owns mm-hmm. a bridal shop. Like, I feel like the top three didn't really get a lot of character exposition, but they were good in confessionals otherwise. I think, especially Sabrina, I think Sabrina had great commentary throughout the season and was a great narrator. Mm-hmm. The whole episode was the first two episodes were all about Sabrina.
Yeah.
Poor Courtney Moon is in my notes. that also she had like a cancer scare afterwards.
Yeah, I think
right?
that they discovered something when she like went to the hospital. So that was like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. So I'm glad that was settled again. Also, I had Nina notes. In the first episode, I did want to highlight like a small moment with Kim and Kat, who are both stars of the season. So mm-hmm. they go to Michael Jefferson in the middle of the night and they're like, can we have some fire? And then Michael is like, who do you think's leading the tribe? And Kat just looks over and it's like Tarzan. And I think that's a great Kat moment because he was just like hootering and hollering all yeah. around. But then Kim pauses. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and Michael Jefferson's like, You think we're letting Tarzan lead the tribe? Like another like survivor mastermind of like that. He's not like, yep, you're right. Nailed it. Yeah. Tarzan is our leader. He's like, you really think we're going to let Tarzan lead us? Come on.
Yeah, no. He might be the biggest who in all of Survivor history, like in terms of the one of the most forgettable people.
That goes the furthest.
Yeah. But Kim pauses. She takes it in for a second. She's like, Matt and Bill. Because at the time, they were like at the top, I guess, because Colton was easily going home mm-hmm. and they were. And I think that was just like a little subtle moment of Kim's fantastic skills at the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Roosters.
And then this question I felt was a personal attack to me. David Schwartz asked, what was worse, Survivor One World or Cheetah Girls One World? And I felt that was an attack. Do you know what the Cheetah Girls are?
I do not.
They're this, this was this Disney Channel original movie. It was a trilogy about four, later three in the third one. It was a girl group and they were trying to make it big. And then they go to India. There's a little bit of cultural appropriation, which is not great, but the third one is they go to India and they have some bops in that song, in that movie.
Raven Simone.
Yes. A Raven and Adrian Bailon, aka the Flamingo from The Masked Singer. Yeah. So that was personally an attack on me because I think One World is both a great season and a great movie.
Yeah.
And then we answered, this one about Alicia being more of a villain than she actually was. What do you think of that?
I think that she was as much of a villain as we saw. Like, I don't think that they probably was more they could have shown us. Like, I don't know if she necessarily just came off as like a bad edit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think she said everything she said. It's not like they Frankenbited a ton this season, so
mm-hmm.
And then the last few things in my notes, speaking of Alicia, if anyone could find me her single that was actually kind of a bop.
Yes. What was it? It was something like free, yeah.
And it was kind of a bop, and I looked everywhere for it. It is scrubbed from the internet. So if someone could get that to me.
What was it when it was the finale? She like yeah. she was this like I guess she announced that she had recorded dropped a single
on your podcast.
Yes, yes,
yeah. And she sang a little bit of it. So that's like the most I could find was your podcast episode with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually kind of a bop. She was like, "It's Miley Cyrus the Climb meets Alicia from the Block." And I was mm-hmm. like, "I don't know if I get that," but it was a little bit of a it slapped, as the kids say.
Yeah.
So if someone could find that for me, I would be very appreciative.
Yeah.
And then anything else in my notes? The narrative, I thought they had a good thing. I said that already. Cross-tribal idols. Yes. I think they need to bring that back. They brought it back for Australian Survivor Season 4. Mm-hmm. And I think it brought a lot of like intertribal dynamics. And I thought it was a fun way to do that there. And I don't like that Sabrina didn't get her own idol.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's interesting, especially on the One World, but even without it, like they've tried to play with that with the Edge of Extinction. Like, here's an extra vote. You can give it to someone who loses the challenge. And then the Jessica Johnson, this is not an advantage mm-hmm. thing. They play a lot with like cross tribal stuff, but I think they need to bring it back.
Yeah. Why? Let me think this through.
So the reasons why for me are that it establishes a connection, especially pre-swap with someone. And then if they both make it to the merge, it's like a narrative beat. And I think it's more interesting than swapping so many times and getting people like you mm-hmm. have a connection there. And then what if like you give it to this yeah. person that you end up hating and then they have it and you're forced to work together and then dismantle this bomb at the merge. That's like this person who could go poison the jury. Yeah. That you have this kind of, I think there's like a lot of pros that don't outweigh the negatives.
So I would rather see some version of like, and we said this a lot, like in the middle era of Survivor of like, okay, you pick one person to bring back to your camp for the day and then just like get to talk to somebody for the whole day and then send them back. I don't think we necessarily need to do it with the idol.
That's fair. I just feel like in a modern day where they cut half the reward challenges that they mm-hmm. would probably cut that too, right? Because it would be after the reward, but not the immunity, or would it be after the immunity?
Yeah. That might be interesting too. That what if the tribe that wins reward, all right, and now pick somebody from the losing tribe that gets to go with you on the reward. Like you would want that, but then you kind of would not want that.
Yeah, like what happened to Kathy in All Stars, right?
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. I just think there needs to be more way that they shake up, like add more interactions with the other tribe.
I hear you,
but not multiple switches, because I think that's something that editing struggles with. Is like the Sarah Lucina and Troy Zan relationship in Game Changers was very under the radar, but it was very established because of that swap. And then it's hard to follow like all the swap connections because they swap too many times. So if they do one swap and figure out other ways to include interactions between cross tribes, I think that's like their sweet spot. And also, I like the fact that there was only one idol in play throughout the merge, even though I think that's what they were doing. Like, if there's one idol, we're not going to rehide it. But mm-hmm. once all the idols leave, then we'll rehide an idol. Because then Kim held on to it, Cloach held on to it, Rob held on to it. So yeah. There was no need to. But then when Malcolm and Reynolds played their idols, Andrea found one right after. So
mm-hmm.
that's my assumption.
The production always wants there to be one idol in the game. And so if somebody has it and sits on it, then it doesn't get rehidden.
That's what I assume.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll track that. We'll track that and see when it changes.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something interesting to track. Okay. Kim went in on every reward, and I feel like that's a great testament to her gameplay. She yep. went on. She was always picked. Or
everybody
she won.
Wanted to curry favor.
Exactly, and I think that's like the testament to her gameplay that she went on every reward. And then I like the fact that they cut the intro, and only had it for the finale. But I was confused why they had the sepia tone for the intro, though, the Ancient Voices intro. I don't know. That was something that I had in my notes. And then lastly, I want to talk about the RHAP content that season. Yes. I think you had some phenomenal content that season. I like the highlight show that you did that season, which I re-listened to.
Mm-hmm.
You did a lot of 7-Up commercial parodies that year.
Yeah, they used to have like a thing that was called like the 7-Up. I forget what they would
7-Up Originals.
7-Up Original. Yeah, we did some parodies of that.
And there was one with Billy Garcia that mm-hmm. I really enjoyed you included there. You did a Tarzanic 3D mm-hmm. trailer. You cut a trailer for that. That was fun.
Yeah.
And you had some great interviews. You had Aris, that was the first appearance of Aris on this Addis. Sorry.
Yes. Yes.
Giuseppe's first appearance. You had a great interview with Chris Doherty. Julie Berry appeared. Mm-hmm. Jerry Manthe had a great interview, and you asked her about Rupert's run for governor, and she had some fantastic responses to that.
Mm-hmm.
Just some great interviews yeah. that season.
And Felipe, this is like such a walk down memory lane.
It's when
it's like rites of passage.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot that they did that. And then I was like, I thought I wanted it back. But then after watching, I'm like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like hearing them talk was less interesting than hearing the people who were voted out and say one last snippet. But we don't need to see it again, I think. Yeah. And I always thought differently. But after rewatching it, I was like, no, that's fine.
It's fine. People miss it because it's gone. But yeah, I don't know if we need it.
Yeah, but that's like most of my notes. And if I forget something, I'll forget. Yeah. I'll be mad at myself later. But
Felipe,
I don't really have...
you did such a great job here. And what thorough notes you came in with.
This is like the short version of my notes. I was like,
you set the bar so high for people to come in and talk about the feedback.
Well, I try my best. You should not listen to my podcast if you don't like thorough note taking, because I go way too granular and I'm super, super detail oriented. And then I feel like I go way too in depth and then I get in my head.
Yes.
But
tell us about your podcast.
So I do two podcasts now. And one of them is with the great Fifth Wheel Navi and the great Davis Commonwealth. We just started it. It's called Whatcha Doing, and it is a Phineas and Ferb rewatch podcast. We are two episodes in, and we're still workshopping it. We have some cool ideas. We're going to make a Dr. Doofenshmirtz Tinder account. That's something that we're working on. That's my task. We're going to make it. So if anyone has ideas for what should be on it, and it's a lot of fun. We do that usually start of the week. That's when we've recorded lately. And our next episode, if you have feedback for us, we'll be talking about Swinter and I think the Magnificent Phineas. I'm not positive, but those are the ones that we have. And then I'm also on the Brazilian Dragon podcast, where I'm talking a lot about Gen Z television and Disney Channel original movies and whatever the hell I want. And right now we're doing a Scooby-Doo. We're watching every single movie, me and my friend Kate, and we just had the great Shit 90 Shows podcast taught me to talk about Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Yes. Is Scooby-Doo very popular with Gen Z?
It was what I watched on Saturday mornings. They would air these movies, so I'm very familiar with them. I think it's hit or miss. I think some people were very involved in the Scooby-Doo lore, and then others weren't. And I think the dynamic that I have with my friend Kate, who I am friends with from college, she watched the live action ones, but she wasn't really into the Scooby-Doo animated ones, but she loves horror. Mm-hmm. So that's why, and she's just a fantastic person and great conversationalist. So I enjoy having her on because I have more of the backstory.
Real quick, Felipe, could we cast the Scooby-Doo gang with survivors?
For survivors or Survivor One World?
Survivors.
Survivors in general. I think Ozzy needs to be included somehow. I just don't know who he'd be.
I mean, is he Shaggy?
He might be Shaggy, but I think Ozzy is a much more confident fellow than Shaggy Rogers. Maybe Sebastian. Sebastian could be Shaggy. Stony Baloney. Are he and Jenna still together?
I don't
Not
know.
Not to ask about the gossip.
I don't know.
I feel like they fell off the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And they were everywhere.
I think they were on a boat. Yeah, they might have sailed off the face of the earth.
True, true, true. Mm-hmm. Daphne, who could be Daphne? I think Kim Spradlin could be Daphne.
She could be. I don't know. I feel like that Daphne is. I don't know. I feel like I feel like that Kim is like a deeper person than Daphne.
That's fair. Maybe you know who else came to mind? Maybe Corinne could be Daphne.
Corinne,
but like a much darker Daphne, like in terms of tone. I feel like she and Daphne have similar. Like, I just think of Corinne in the suit jacket that she had on Gabon, and I feel like Daphne wears that. Who else could be Daphne? I think Velma Aubrey fits the bill for Velma.
Oh yeah, Velma. Yeah, Aubrey would be good Velma. That's you nailed
actually,
that one.
Maybe Daphne and Velma could be Aubrey and Andrea.
I think, oh, okay.
Because Daphne, we talked about in Zombie Island, but Daphne was a television host for a paranormal show. Mm-hmm. And Fred was her producer. So I think maybe Andrea could be.
What about Daphne. Fred?
Fred, find a boring white guy.
Yeah.
And you have
Matt Quinlan? Could the rooster?
Matt Quinlan, Michael Jefferson, any of them. Maybe Pete Rowe. I think Pete Rowe could be a good Fred, but he's not
blonde. Trying to find a guy who's blonde, though.
Are there many blonde men on Survivor? There are. Never mind. That's a stupid question. Let me think. That's
all right. Well, let's let Twitter if they have it for us. Let us know your Scooby Doo cast.
Yeah, please tweet me that at What the Fleep. Thank you, Rob.
What for the Fleep? Yes,
great handle,
great Twitter name.
Thank you so much. I think I was very upset with myself for letting my old one get stolen, but I think that's what needed to happen for me to get a much better one. And 100% credit goes to you.
You're reborn.
I am reborn. I'm like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everybody for checking this out. We will be back on this Wednesday night to talk about the 36th best season of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction. Felipe, Edge of Extinction, too high or too low?
Well, it's over one world, so it's definitely too high. Mm-hmm. Like I said, one world is at least top 30, objectively top 10 bias.
Yeah.
Involved, but I think Edge of Extinction, I think my biggest issue with it is the narrative in terms of like,
sure,
take a shot every time I said that this podcast, but like I feel like we got a lot of some characters and very little of other characters that I think Victoria was underserved in the edit. I think Julie was underserved in the edit, Julia especially. But then we got a lot of like David and Kelly and Rick and Wardog. So I don't know. But it does have Big Wendy.
I'm interested. So. I'm interested to go back and rewatch The Edge coming up this week.
Interesting to rewatch these more recent seasons because, like you said on TEOS, the book was not really written yet for those. Like, I think these are kind of the postmortem on those seasons with some time going back. Are you planning to do a TEOS or no?
So there is conversation about it, but that is, you know, a bigger conversation between myself and Josh Wiggler.
Yeah, but Dad Josh, I'm getting to you're now Funkle Rob. We have changed your status in the Post Show Recaps Discord. You're Funkle Rob.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Fun uncle. But Josh is doing great content on PSR, and join us there if you're interested in stuff. Yeah, so even if there's no TEOs, there's still great places to listen to Josh and Rob talk about miscellaneous things.
Yes, and Josh and I are going to be back together on RHAP, starting off our RHAP Rewind. We're going to watch Pirate Master. Felipe, have you seen Pirate Master?
I have not. I have never seen Pirate Master.
Neither have I.
Every time I think of Pirate Master, I think of Krista Hastie for whatever reason, and I don't know why.
She was on Survivor Pearl Islands as a pirate season.
But like, why her of all the people on the season? Like, why do I think of her? Wasn't that Russell's season show that he applied for?
Yeah, that's, I think, how they found Russell Hance.
Yeah.
From Russell the people Hance. That brought you Russell Hance, it's Pirate Master.
Maybe you can start Russell Hance shows and then do Flipped Off and then do the cooking show that he had in April. Just go all the Russell Hance.
Russell Hance had a cooking show?
Didn't you interview him for during a season and it went really off the rails?
I think his family has like a restaurant or something like that. But I don't think it ever got picked up.
Yeah, and then he had the house flipping show that I watched a few episodes of. Yeah. That was not good.
Flipped off.
When he did that podcast with you and John, he said, may I curse on this podcast?
Sure.
At this point, he said, quote, John Venture, that's a beautiful motherfucker. But
where's the lie, Russell? Fincher,
But then he said the thing about John Fincher is that he's so good looking, but he never sees him with a woman. And look where he's at now.
Yeah. Another one of Russell's great calls. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Felipe, thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for checking this out. We'll be back with another look back at a Survivor season this Wednesday night when we'll talk about The Edge of Extinction. Ari Ferrari and Matt Scott will be my guests on the panel to talk about it all. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.